Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of the Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is author Mary Martin. Her latest book, Night Crossing, is about to be published. Mary, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into Night Crossing, because there's a lot to talk about in that book, can you tell our audience just a little bit about yourself? Who is Mary Martin?
Yes, of course. Well, first of all, I live in Toronto, Canada, and I find my inspiration for writing in a good number of sources, but before the trilogy of Remembrance was written and now completed, I wrote the Osgood trilogy, which was greatly inspired by my many years of law practice here in Toronto. And it was set in a small law firm here, and that's the type of situation I practiced in. But after I finished that trilogy, I moved on into an entirely different world, and that's the world of art. And out of that comes the trilogy of Remembrance.
Okay. I have followed your career with great interest. I mean,
you hit the scene
about, 10 years ago with the Osgood trilogy. And
yes.
And once that was completed, you embarked on the trilogy of Remembrance. What is the fascination with trilogies?
It's an interesting question. On the one hand, my first answer to that is, I guess I'm a writer who, like many artists, likes a big canvas to work on. And actually, when you start off with a particular character, say Alexander Wainwright, who is Britain's finest landscape artist and star of the trilogy of Remembrance, starting off with him, it's almost a process of getting to know somebody who becomes a really close friend. And you get to the end of one book, The Drawing Lesson, which is the first, and it's almost as if he's telling you, hey, there's a lot more happening or yet to happen. And so ideas just sort of float around, and you start in with the second book, which is The Fate of Pride. And of course, once you've committed yourself to calling those two books part of a trilogy, the next one has to come, and that's Night Crossing. It's very interesting about these characters. Alexander Wainwright really is the traveler about the world, and he's the kind of person who engages with people on his travels. And in these stories, he comes across much to think about and to act upon. So he's almost like a world traveler who's noticing everything as he goes. I like to work with various kinds of themes, and that tends to lead me on into the next novel. But as I said to begin with, it's set in the world of art, and I have really loved art, I guess, all my life, and had a great passing interest in it. And it's really something, when you create a trilogy, you have to sort of get to really know that world. Just as I practiced law for many years, it wasn't that difficult to create the world on the page, the world of law which I'd inhabited for so long. And with the second trilogy, the trilogy of Remembrance, set in the world of art, I guess I've just always been interested in art and followed things along. So that for me, if I didn't write in trilogies, I think I'd run out of space and somehow need to solve that problem. And the other interesting aspect is just as I finished off Night Crossing, there's another character in that novel his name is Rinaldo, and Rinaldo is a conceptual artist, and he is completely antithetical to Alexander, who is a realist landscape artist. And I found that as I was nearing the end of Night Crossing, Rinaldo was becoming more and more interesting to me, and I began to think maybe I should do another book with Rinaldo at the center and Alex somewhere else in the book. So that's, I guess, somehow I think in threes.
All right. You know, I can see the advantage of creating a character with care. And the process is a lot more complex than most people realize. I know, because I had to create one for a movie project. Recently, I was reading a discussion on the subject, and some authors invest a great deal of time and effort. Do you fully map out your character before you put the proverbial pen to paper, or does the character evolve over time?
Well, it's an interesting question, Simon, and I would say this, that when I first started Conduct in Question, the legal thriller being the first in the Osgood trilogy, I did work more in the fashion of trying to write down what I could imagine about the characters. But by the time I got to the trilogy of Remembrance, I was finding that it's better to listen to the characters, because if you allow them to, they will tell you a whole lot. And, you know, they almost can, in the best of circumstances, just sort of grow before you, and it's your job to follow them along. So I guess the short answer is I've done both.
Right. In fact, the character I needed to invent, I mapped him out, and I actually went so far as to interview him.
Yeah, well, that's a great idea.
Right.
I think.
Oh,
yeah, let him talk to you.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about Trilogy of Remembrance. Would
sure.
you care to set the stage for Night Crossing by giving us a sketch? And please do excuse the pun, but
of
I
course.
Couldn't resist it.
Oh, no, I'd love to.
drawing lesson.
Well, I think with the trilogy of Remembrance, the first book is The Drawing Lesson, and Alexander Wainwright is the protagonist, front and center. The basic theme of that novel is the question whether you think that the world, the universe, is really sort of a random, meaningless dance of molecules, or whether you think, as Alexander does, that the world is filled with mysterious forces and it's our job to try and figure out what's going on. And that's a basic theme throughout the whole trilogy, starting with drawing lesson. The Fate of Pride is a different story, but it also has its own fundamental question. And the fundamental question is simply, can the very best and the very worst of mankind reside in one human breast and be active in one human breast at the same time? And this is where we learn about the fate of Jonathan Pryde, who on the one hand is a wonderful charitable donor and setting up good works related to the arts all over the world, and at the very same time he's doing some pretty dreadful things which end up raising a great deal of money for him. The Night Crossing also has its own fundamental theme, and one of them is it's about a love that is so profound that it literally transcends life and death. And so that's each book brings Alex to a new realization about his own life and his own art. And in each book, he's trying to move on to a different stage in his art. And his so-called friend Rinaldo, the conceptual artist, is always there with a jab of some sort to push him onward. And so I'd say you could certainly pick up any of the three books and read them in any order. That would not be a problem. So they're more related in terms of themes and questions that I raise. I should warn, however, I don't pretend to have the answers, but I hope to start sort of a thought process about some of these questions that I make Alexander struggle with.
Well, listeners, I'll give you my sage advice. I would actually read them in order. I think it makes a great deal of sense. But yeah, you're right. A reader could pick up Night Crossing and, no harm, no foul. But I think it's better to have that background knowledge, shall we say.
Yeah, I would tend to agree in that sense, Simon, because I think I've certainly tried with each novel to sort of build on the preceding one. And you do get, if you sat down and read all three in the order they're produced, it would give you, I think, a richer texture, perhaps.
Right. And indeed, I have read all three.
I know, that's great.
The one thing I noticed is that Alexander Wainwright has always been a man with angels and demons. Maybe it's just me, but do I detect that aspect is a little more profound in Night Crossing.
I think that's very true, Simon. I think as I have worked through the books, writing them, that I've come to various realizations that I didn't start out with. So I'm happy to hear that you think it's more profound, that I've actually progressed throughout the three novels to different levels.
Okay, let's do some shameless commercialization.
Okay.
I've got nothing against that. Where can people buy your books? Amazon, etc.?
Yeah. The books in the Trilogy of Remembrance are, the first two are presently on just about every online bookstore, including Amazon and Smashwords. I think by September, Night Crossing will also have joined them at all the online bookstores that, you know, most of them anyway. So they're quite easy to obtain. And they do come in print form, whether it be hardcover or just soft cover, and also ebook. So you can download them at Smashwords or Amazon quite easily.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was having a computer crisis.
Oh, dear.
My browser decided that it needed a nap. I sort of missed part of that. When is Night Crossing going to hit the...
well, it's going to be actually available sometime early July, but in terms of posting it up on all the online bookstores, which I gather is a bit of a task, I would say Night Crossing will certainly be available by the end of August at basically any online bookstore.
Okay, and let me guess. Mm-hmm. You have a website.
Yes.
Right. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find it at Mary E. Martin Trilogies.com.
Okay.
Yeah, now I'd just like to mention one sort of fun thing that I'm doing on my blog that's at that website. And what I've been doing is having Alexander do the work, do the blogging. And I found that that's, satisfying to me in the sense of I get to do more with Alexander. Alexander has in his mind this idea that cyberspace is a wonderful place in which he can travel backwards and forwards in time and space. And I'm doing a series of blogs in which Alexander goes and meets famous writers, famous artists, and talks with them. And brings up questions about art and about life. Certainly by the end of the Remembrance trilogy, I think people will know that I connect all forms of art and life very, very, very closely. So in any event, Alexander has met the famous painter Edward Hopper, and he's met J.D. Salinger and Anton Chekhov. So this is kind of fun, and I think perhaps some of your listeners might find it entertaining. But that's blog site.
Oh, indeed. I think your idea is a splendid one.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and actually, I've been arranging some more realistic ones. I have my friend Alexander has gone out and visited a real live artist in his studio, and in another case, Alexander met up with a character in another novel, which I read and got in touch with the author, and the author said, hey, that would be fun, having my particular character meet up with yours. So we did a blog post together on that. So that's fun. So there's lots of imaginative things Alexander has in mind.
I love your books.
Thank you.
Right. Let's talk about art.
Sure.
I'll start with a story.
Mm-hmm.
Several months ago, I started collaborating with a well-known stained glass artisan. And as soon as I started reading Night Crossing, yeah, I thought, Fate of Pride. And then the drawing lesson, and I went into sleuthing mode, yeah, which is something I have a tendency to do. I am firmly convinced that Alexandra Wainwright is none other than Turner in a more modern setting. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, I think you definitely are. Although, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I didn't really realize that until I was working on Night Crossing. And I should mention that on the cover of Night Crossing is a watercolor by the British artist J.M.W. Turner. And it's really quite subtle and beautiful. And it is by Turner. And then I started thinking, yes, you know, the most important thing about Alex's art is he has this amazing light emanating from it, which makes all his viewers think that they are visualizing the beyond. And this is, you know, very, very powerful. And a lot of his challenges are in his art is to try to make that light come through. His paintings, not only his landscapes, but through people. And at the end of the trilogy, he is able to make his light come through that abstract forms. Now, just looking a little bit about Turner, Turner felt that the light in his paintings, he was trying to express a spiritual aspect. And so I thought, that's exactly what Alex is trying to do. And then I thought back to the drawing lesson, which begins by Alexander winning the Turner Prize, which is given by the Tate Modern. And so I thought, I've been subconsciously thinking of Turner all along. So I think you're right, Simon.
Okay, I'll take it one stage further. I think the Alexander Wainwright painting that wins the Turner Prize is in some ways loosely based on the Heywayne.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yes. So it's amazing what, your interest in art tosses up from the subconscious, and you just use it.
Have you done much research into Turn of the Man rather than...
Not a lot, but I gather he was almost a little bit reclusive, and he was not recognized as a particularly good artist even in his own time. It was only, I believe, toward the end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, that people began to really appreciate his work.
Right. This is a surprise question for you, mm-hmm. and you can just say no. Have you ever heard of a lady by the name of Sophia Booth?
I don't believe I have, Simon.
Okay. In 2012, paintings came up again. They had been denied provenance, mm-hmm. but they were alleged to be by Turner, and the trail led back to one lady by the name of Sophia Booth, who was Turner's landlady and mistress.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Well, they're fascinating in that they were all painted in Margate, which is not too dissimilar from the watercolor that you're planning on using on mm-hmm. your book cover.
Ah, well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'll have to look her up.
Oh, please do. If you just look up Sophia Booth, I'm sure you'll I'm sure you'll find it.
I very likely will. Yeah, right. Very interesting.
Right. Now, again with my sleuthing hat on, I cannot find the answer. I know that Ronaldo is loosely based on someone, but who is the someone?
Who might he be? interesting question. when I was writing at one point, I'm not sure exactly when it was, I read a biography of Marcel Duchamp and sort of got into his thinking, and he's considered the granddaddy of conceptual artists, and he worked in the early 1900s and was extremely influential. So I probably had him sort of in the back of my mind.
I'm also curious. You live in Toronto, Canada, yet use London, England as the backdrop. I take it you must have spent some time there.
Oh, yes. I certainly have. I've visited a lot, but unfortunately never had the opportunity to live there more than a few weeks at a time. So, but I do enjoy going to London, and it just seems to be the right kind of place for a character like Ronaldo to be.
Oh, indeed, and also Alex. You couldn't, I don't think, get away with, placing it in Toronto.
I don't think so. It just somehow wouldn't quite fit.
Right.
And if it were to be New York, it would probably, Ronaldo should be the star.
Indeed. And now, you mentioned a new book. Is this going to be part of another trilogy, or are you going to make it a trilogy of four?
That probably should be the wise thing to do, because when you commit yourself, as I said earlier about trilogies, you are under the gun to produce them. but what I thought I would do is probably take a year off from writing. There's an awful lot of work in this new landscape of publishing, an awful lot of work in promoting. And so I have to attend to that. One project I've always wanted to do is I have a couple of children's books in mind. And since I now have two grandchildren, I thought maybe I should get busy with them. And actually, I got the title of one of them from my daughter when she was just about 6 years old. And she was having a chat with me, and I think very impressed with her sense of being grown up. And she said to me, "You know, Mom, I used to believe in rainbows, even." And, of course, I said, well, rainbows do exist. You know, so I thought that would make a good title for a book for children.
Oh, indeed. In fact, last week I was interviewing an author who has written a Civil War novel. And The whole concept came from his 10-year-old great-grandson.
Yes. Out of the mouths of babes come brilliant ideas.
What are your plans for marketing?
Well, I think every author is taking the project into their own hands pretty much, or need to keep as much control over it as possible. I think promotion has to a very great extent moved online, and there are so many resources there. It would take a number of lifetimes to use them, but that's not to exclude the real world and appearances and that sort of thing and book signings. So many authors now are really having to do that themselves, and I'm there too. And the biggest challenge, I think, for writers today is not necessarily writing the book and not necessarily getting it published, but to rise to any form of attention, because there's just millions of books out there and more are coming every day. So the question for all authors is, how do I get notice? And it's tough. You know, it's easy to get published and up online, and but for someone to actually jump on it and start recommending it and getting the word out, that's the challenge. And I mean, everybody is faced with that.
Right. Well, one of the things I've noticed, and I've been a book reviewer for well over a decade, that you know, it's really up to the author. You know,
yes.
The author has to get out there and do something.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's very, very time consuming, but you know, it's also can be a great deal of fun. And if you look at it creatively, and as I was mentioning earlier, these blogs by my characters, they're not only fun, but they're also like pen sketches almost for another work. So I'm rather hoping that I can refer back to them sometime for, you know, ideas for another novel.
Right. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I created the character and interviewed him, and I found it very insightful. And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, right. And you know, the idea you're using is great, because effectively you're doing just that. You know, you could even throw you know, a new character into the mix and
yeah, exactly.
Right, and you know, see how they interact together.
That's right. That's right. It was interesting the other day. I was just looking through some of my older writings and seeing just what led up to the drawing lesson. And it was quite a different story. If you have a half a minute, I can tell you.
Sure.
The idea came to me, or rather, put it this way, I was challenged by another writer after I'd finished the Osgood trilogy, the legal thrillers. I was challenged to write something other than a mystery. And that was sort of said with, you know, looking down upon mysteries. So I thought, okay, I'll try that. And for some reason, it came to me that I should try a romance of some sort. So I had this man and woman on the Orient Express headed for Venice. And then I thought, you know, maybe I'm not that far from mystery, given Agatha Christie. But in any event, after 30 pages of writing, I was getting extremely bored. And thought, of course, if the author's getting bored, what's going to happen to the poor reader? So right at that point in time, Alexander Wainwright sort of appeared almost in my mind. And he was immediately an interesting character. And in that, what was ended up as a short story, he was sort of almost like the stranger from out of town who comes into the town and fixes things up for people and then goes away. And that's very much the role that Alex played. He was also on the train. He was fascinated with the woman who, in fact, became his muse, Daphne. But his role in that short story was really that he brought the other man and that woman together, Richard. And so it was quite a different context. And then I thought, okay, Alexander really wants Daphne to himself, so we're going to have to get rid of Richard. And that's where the drawing lesson began.
That's great. Story.
It's a roundabout way of getting into a story.
I'm looking at the clock, and our time at last is at an end. But I really want to thank you for talking to us today. And
oh, it's a delight.
And I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you every success with Night Crossing and your future endeavors.
Well, thank you so much, Simon, and this opportunity to chat with you and your listeners has been a real pleasure for me.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Pleasure is all mine.
Well, we won't argue. So thank you very much.
This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day and week. We'll be back soon with another program. Till next time, goodbye.